This is Shayla Shapiro. Before the podcast starts today, I want to explain about the show this week. You're going to hear that it was a little bit different. And unfortunately, due to licensing concerns, I'm not allowed to broadcast the songs that were played on the show today. But you can find a listing of all the songs and who chose them by going to writethebook.podbean.com or by reading the information about today's podcast on iTunes. I hope you enjoy the poems, and next week we'll be back with our regular format.
You're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMMLP, Burlington, Vermont. I'm Shayla Shapiro, and this is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. Write the Book features interviews with authors, poets, illustrators, agents, and editors. It's Monday, April 12th. Today on Write the Book, we're doing something a little bit different. In celebration of National Poetry Month, I contacted a number of past guests who are poets and asked that they send me two things. First, a poem that I might read on the show. And second, a musical selection that evokes for them the kind of reaction that a good poem might bring about. And I left this pretty open. I encouraged people to just pick a song that speaks to them in some way, lyrically, musically, or emotionally. Some people chose to link poems that had been inspired by songs alongside the songs themselves. Others just chose poems and songs that might complement one another. And then a few others kept things much more random and just put together a poem with a favorite song. One of the poets, Natasha Saye, said that she loves Just About Anything by Leonard Cohen. And so in preparing this show and picking a Cohen song to accompany Natasha's poem, Nell is the name of that poem, I stumbled across an interesting quote from Leonard Cohen. In an interview with Terry Gross on the public radio program Fresh Air, Cohen spoke about what to him is the difference between a poem and a song lyric. He said, certain poems lie very gracefully on the page. Some poems just naturally are meant to be absorbed in silence, where the tempo is decided on by the reader, and he can reverse it and forward it and linger. And then there are other kinds of lyrics that have their own metrical, empirical advice, and they invite you to move swiftly from line to line. So here are 10 poems and 10 songs by former Write the Book guests, and you're going to hear the name of each poet first, and then their poem, their name again, and then the song that person selected. And I really hope you enjoy it. Natasha Saye, Nell. He knew that love was sound without crack or flaw. She didn't know how to tell. They listened to the unknowns and turned away. She willed herself to know heat. He cast himself by knowing. They knew duty. He hid his other desires to know. She wanted to know God. He didn't know the difference between ringing and tolling, between being filled with water or turned upside down. She wanted to know who she was when she heard. She would never know what he knew. As fire knows metal, they knew each other. Natasha Saye. David Budbill, Sweet Early Spring. When the understory of the woods is flattened, and you can see the contours of the earth, the rock outcroppings, all this, just after the last pockets of snow disappear, while everything is still sere, brown, gray, when now and then a woodcock whistles, or you can hear a lone goose going somewhere, all this sweet early spring, with no bugs at all, none, not a single one, this clear, beautiful, and brief moment, this emptiness. This is the time I love the best, before the world fills up again with insects, leaves, brush, birds, green, a last brief rest, quiet and peace, before I have to turn and face the lush and fertile, noisy spring. David Budbill. Charles Harper Webb. The open-air recital survived a shaky start. The open-air recital survived a shaky start. When in the first movement of the Emperor Concerto, where Beethoven tries to outswagger Napoleon, a woodpecker countered with Bronx cheers. Next, every sprinkler in the grassy amphitheater squeaked on, and listeners fled as if the little general's cavalry had thundered, sabers flashing from the woods. The rondo took a whooping, too, when a squirrel in the oak that spread above the stage banged acorns off the soloist's head and his ebony grand. The setting sun scorched through dark columns of trees behind the stage as the new soloist marched on. Her blonde hair glowed angelic as the tones she drew, just tuning from her violin. We strained forward as her hands caressed the wood. She was deep into Tchaikovsky's Canzonetta, where he mourns his unconsummated marriage, when a woman's voice rose from behind the trees. Oh God, it trilled, a clear coloratura. Oh, oh, oh. What could the soloist do but keep playing? What could the conductor do but wag his baton? What could the damp audience do but shush our children, pretending not to hear the woman's sobbing obbligato merge into the theme? And when the finale began, allegro vivacissimo, and the soloist lashed her instrument into a gallop, it seemed natural that the woman's cries should intensify, and the soloist draw strength from her as together they approached that last exhausting run-up, the scale of passion, toward the summit from which, gasping and quivering, they flung themselves. When paroxysms done, the conductor dropped his hands, and the violinist, on whose slim legs, seen through her violet gown, I could have played a pretty tune, lowered her bow. The applause that surged up out of the soaked grass was for the woman in the woods as much as for the soloist, head bowed, smiling, spent. Charles Harper Webb. David Joss, The Hatchet. Thelonious Monk, Round Midnight, New York, April 5th, 1957. Years later at Bellevue, he'll paint the still life Mingus mentions in Beneath the Underdog, an apple and a hatchet on a background black as the night Nellie committed him, the blade in angular love with the round apple, its silver edge ever so barely touching the blood-red skin. But now he sits at the piano, sweating, cigarette smoke a noose unraveling around his neck, and plays the chart he's played 1,000 times, but never twice. Once he said there were 2 kinds of notes, the wrong ones and those that don't sound as good. These are the wrong, wrong notes. He stops, wipes his brow. Selection 3, take 7, the intercom crackles. Orin Keep News, producing Thelonious himself, the master accompanied by silence, but Monk's not listening. He hears only a ruin, so blue and vast he could call it, if there were words where he is, sky. There are 2 kinds of silence, too. He cocks his head to hear which one he's playing, how the hatchet envies the sunlight, the way it splits the apple in half without violence, if only it could sleep inside the white heart of the apple without destroying it. If only midnight could be painted without obliterating the white canvas. His fingers hover, trembling, over the keys, and the cracks between them where the notes he's looking for reside, the right notes that can only be played by refusing all others. He's playing them now, head nodding, foot tapping, the strain of listening, making him grimace, like a man crazy or in love. David Joss. Jody Gladding, Vernal Pool. Why, every year, must I learn this lying low enough for the peepers to flood with their calls, sound, overflowing every depression in the night, all the space there is, but the space in me is snow melt, rain falling on deaf ears, unless I listen hard. Jody Gladding. Leslie Ullman, Agape 2. After lines by Cesar Vallejo and Ramon Lopez Velarde. Forgive me, Lord, how little I have died, how little of the day's intermittent gifts of dappled light and silence I have sacrificed to a world of causes lost, to handshakes made in slow motion in a barrage of flashbulbs. Wet earth of liquid evenings, when the rain could be tears the earth itself is shedding. How remiss I've been in signing petitions against clerics who beat women and priests who fake vows. Tonight the wet earth loosens after weeks of holding grass blades and giant cottonwoods in place, and I have given no thought to who you might be or whom you love best. It has fed six harvests of alfalfa, holding itself taut beneath the sleek gray cat who streaks across the neighbor's yard with a mouse in its jaws. I saw a boy cradling him the other day like a large purring sack, and I doubt I will ever give such attention to the question of which of your temples offers the best shot at an afterlife. Now the plants give back the scent of their first green, an inarticulate fragment of memory that fans a handful of flame. Before it sinks back into the heart's spent soil, the light fades, the ground weeps, the plants are breathing hard like fish returned to their element. There are scraps of memory that long to be given this rain, and a silence that might feed them. I uncork a Shiraz from the other side of the world, pour olive oil into a heated pan, and select from a string bag the season's red and green and yellow offerings. There are piano riffs from Puerto Rico, the smoky flutes of Egypt, and this evening the notes of a Basque accordion cascading like blown petals. They give off the residual warmth of buried coals, something to warm the amnesiac's heart. And sometimes I believe with the largest part of my own helpless heart that if we could let just one ancestral song lure us into the forgotten sacrament of dance, we would die less at one another's hands. There's something I've wanted to say. Tonight I almost taste it, something surprising and right, like the rain glistening on ground that repairs itself in the dark. Leslie Ullman. Claire Rossini, The Subterrestrial. I grew naturally barefoot, and what dust gilded my feet clouded the water in the tub. I climbed out, radiant, as my bedroom's virgin saint, her stone eyes looking down from the lip of some perfect way, which turned, how was it? From the predatory shadows, retreating to the west, the last stand of oak sawed down, carted off, all the living branches still shuddering with leaves, and in their place the airy naves of bungalows rising, the whine of the drills a tense fugue, as I took my shovel and pierced the damp furious, as the noon whetting accumulus, the butterflies trail jigsawing over my head. The bungalows now with walls, windows roughed in, the dimple I was digging deepening into cave. I slew sunlight on my way down, groined myself to a root tangle. Don't tell me a child is sweetness, a child is the barbaric we slay and bury beneath the temple's polished floor. Pulling over a sheet metal roof, I crouched in homemade gloom, my appliances, lungs, beating heart, while on the hill, new doors fitted and oiled and swinging shut against the remonstrance of Midwestern clouds. Claire Rossini. David Huddle, Hilltop Sonnet. Who visits this high meadow, lawn of the dead, to see blue and bluer mountains that rise out of the west to converse with the crows, great winged turkey buzzards, black kites riding, thermals in seamless silence to greet deer, here at twilight grazing near the wood's edge, to scare the huge groundhog that lives inside the brick-walled graveyard. Who moves through this space? A yellow dog leading a deaf old man who likes to talk, a girl and her boyfriend who sit atop her car's roof, murmuring quietly, two off-leash labs ignoring their shouting owner, a policeman who parks up here to feel lonely, guarding the wind. David Huddle. Charles Barish, 40th High School Reunion. I'm afraid I'll get there and start bawling when I see the Lindas, Susans, Davids, and Andys, no Natashas, Crystals, Dakotas in this crowd. And they'll think it's because I've missed them. I won't be able to say, no, it's because I don't think of you at all. Because 40 years have gone by faster than high school. Because the girl who played Wendy in our Peter Pan production has grown up. Because it's an event at a hotel, not the school gym with twisted crepe paper and balloons and shadowy chaperones watching us slow dance. Because there'll be an open bar and hors d'oeuvres and a DJ. Because the invitation requested business casual, and I knew what that meant. Charles Barish. Sidney Lee, Small Jeremiad. I killed a catbird once when I was young. I'd still insist I didn't really mean to, just noticed him and flung a thoughtless stone. I've done much worse, so why would this live on? My cracked LP is Mulligan meets Getz. I killed a catbird once when I was young. But why, awake at dawn, should I have turned from husky saxes intoning that old feeling to some poor bird at whom I flung a stone? My thoughts oblique, a catbird flew to our lawn as I chose the record, a vestigial, unusual thing. Like the bird in my part of New England, I cast no stone. Yet I'm sunk in lamentation, things I have done, ones I have left undone. There's that old feeling. I killed a catbird once when I was young. My life's the only life I'll ever own. I own it all when memory wings in. I killed a catbird once when I was young, just noticed him and flung a thoughtless stone. Sidney Lee.
I had so much fun putting that show together. I hope you enjoyed it. Many thanks to the poets who participated. You can find more information about who they are and where their poetry can be found on my blog, writethebook.wordpress.com, or you'll be able to tomorrow. We're short on time for the Bookworm's calendar this week, so I'm just going to make one announcement. Champlain College is still accepting applications for its 2010 Young Writers Conference. This three-day event will be held May 21st through the 23rd, and the deadline is Friday, April 16th. Applications are available online at www.go.champlain.edu/write. I'm going to put the Write the Book prompt onto my podcast site this week, so if you'd like to see the prompt, go to writethebook.podbean.com or iTunes to see that prompt. If you're interested in sharing this show with out-of-town friends, let them know they can stream it live at theradiator.org every Monday from 2 to 3. And as I just said, archived episodes are available as podcasts. Please remember that this station is here thanks to community support and involvement. For my part, I want to thank DJ Archie for his help here today. Archie is going to have a show on the Radiator in coming weeks. It'll probably be on Thursdays from 12 to 1. And he's going to be offering semi-professional advice and support for stay-at-home fathers and anyone else. This is a quote, and I believe it's meant to be said with a smile, whose will to live has been crushed by the responsibilities of childcare. So listen for that sometime soon. And more information about The Radiator is available online at theradiator.org. Stay tuned. Cheryl Willoughby brings you the world of music in just a minute. This has been Write the Book. I'm Shayla Shapiro, and you're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMM LP, Burlington, Vermont.